Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the fifth episode of In the Eyes of Grieving Mothers. I'm accompanied with a good friend of mine, Soto, and the co-host,
Swab Gonzalez. Yo, today we have a dynamic speaker. He's been in the community doing community work forever. And it's an honor for me, because I've been trying to get this brother to talk to me in my podcast for a while, but he always busy. He's always busy, which is a good thing, because a lot of time where we come from, if we don't stay busy, somebody else stay busy for us.
Right.
Yes. So welcome to the show, my man, Luis Soto. What's going
on,
bro?
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. It is a good morning. Now that we have you.
Yeah, yeah.
And we got Tanisha in the house. She made it, people. She's here. Five episodes. How you feel about that?
I feel amazing. I also just want to just thank, you know, God for the opportunity for having a diverse group of individuals that are willing to come out and share their story. As I always say, that grief is just not associated with a loss of a loved one. Grief could be anywhere, as to you know, relationships, separation from a child. You know, it's a lot of different ways to grieve. Grief is just an emotional, overwhelming emotional response to anything that has great significance to it. So, and I'm glad to have Soto here with me today. It's such a pleasure. I just got a brain freeze.
Don't we all sometimes?
I think I'm just so excited. I really am. I'm really excited about having Soto here today. So before I start, I always like to start off with informing everyone, all the listeners, about grief. Grief is an overwhelming emotional response to the loss of a loved one, a relationship, or anything that has great emotional significance, like a job, moving to a new city, a new area. There is no specific time frame for associated with grief. Even though grief have universal emotions, such as personal experiences, grief has its own ways, psychologically, physically, emotionally, and it comes in different stages. And sometimes people, when they share about grief, you can hear them speak about how in the stage of the denial, bargaining, guilt, that they get locked within these emotions. So we have been bringing guests on just for them to highlight or share with the community what it's like to experience anything that you may consider to be have been a grieving moment in your life. And not only that, how are you able to navigate through it? Was it any professional help? Was it, you know, you using any type of substance? What was your way of getting out of it? But first, we always like to start back, like they do in therapy, when they sit you back in a chair and say, take us back to your childhood.
Ooh.
So let's go back to Lewis's childhood, right? Let's see what it was like for him growing up from his childhood into his adolescence.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that is. So, hi, everybody. You know, like I say, you know, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, my good friend, Kali, you know, Tanisha and Suave. Wow, this is my brother. So it's a pleasure to be here. I want to say thank God, my higher power, you know, for waking me up this morning, you know, and give me the ability to be here and do what what I love to do. So anyway, well, coming from Puerto Rico, since I was a child, wow, she took me back that's a long time ago, you know. But I think the my first experience with grieving, yeah, that was on when my dad and my mother separated. When they went, you know, that's what I remember, where it was you know, emotional, you know, breakdown for me, you know. And that took me a long time, even when I got older, very older. I was already here in Philly. When I learned about what I was, what happened to me, and what I went through, what that death does do to me in that moment. Mm-hmm. But because I was a child, I don't know how, you know, I don't even know what happened, you know. So, but it took me many years, you know, to deal with that and then to accept it and learn how to heal from that. So, and I say heal because, yes, something we heal from, something we still the process, maybe the whole life to working to heal from, but it's something that we heal from because we have some acceptance. So I accepted what happened between them, and I understand that us as a human beings and a relationship, that not just intimate or, you know, man and woman relationship, but any kind of relationship, this thing can happen, and we do recover from that.
So I want to ask you this. So you said that it started, like, you experienced grief at a younger age when you was younger through a relationship separation with your parents. How did you act out if you did? Like, was you having any issues with school? Was you being rebellious? Like, what was your behaviors like as you watched your parents separate?
So, yeah, and that happened because I changed and my grade changed and my assistant to classes changed. I started skip classes, you know, and do stuff. I even started smoke weed when I was 11 years old. Very, you know, I was a kid, so. And that's, yeah, that touched me. But by then, like I say, it took me many years to see that, to realize that, wow, that came from that moment. You know, I don't blame my parents because still, there was a decision that they did, that they had to make, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, in that moment, the best decision for them. So, but yeah, that changed my whole.
I mean, so it's interesting that like one act of grief could lead you to a whole life of trauma. Mm-hmm. You know, and he just said it, like smoking weed at 11. You know, leads to other things. I can relate to that. Because like I shared before, I remember when my grandfather got killed. Mm-hmm. That was like the moment for me where I said, I'm going to get high. I wanted, you know, that pain. I needed to get rid of that pain. Because in the Latinos households, we are taught, it's culture that men don't cry, suck it up. You could get through it, but you don't really speak about it. It's not like today yeah. where we're going to therapy. Back then, it was like, man, don't cry. You know, so our only solution was, let's go get high. Let's go hang with the homies, which led to from weed to dust and everything else in between. You know, so I just want the audience to understand that it's all right. It's all right to grieve. But it's also all right to seek help. Mm-hmm. Even at a young age, let somebody know, I need help. Because that is a problem in our culture that we got to correct.
Yeah.
Did you ever, Soto, did you ever have that conversation with your parents? Or did your parents ever sit down with you and share with you that they were in the process of separating?
Nah. Now, that I remember, we was 9 siblings, you know.
So if I fight one, I had to fight all 9?
Yeah. Living at the household, by that time, there was 9 because we all 13 together. We 13 together. So, but the 9 was, these 9 was from my father and my mother. You know, my mother got all the 3 first before us and 1 younger. So... So that was not, I don't know.
And where you fell in between? You the youngest?
And the third younger. You know, it's two younger than me. All my sister older than me. And I got two brothers younger than me.
So now you were 11, so you had older siblings, right? So did you notice any change of behavior with your other siblings? Like, that was in the house, what was their behavior like?
So what I see changing there was because my father was the street, El Estricto. You know, he was the street, like, he
was. His father was a disciplinary, strict person.
Yeah, thank you.
Puerto Rican. That means if you act up, we coming with a piece of caña. For those that don't know, it's called sugar cane, and it hurts.
That's
how we did it in Puerto Rico. That's how people did it.
Even with the electric cable, with
the cord, you know. Yeah, listen, his story resonate with a lot of people that's hearing it, especially from the island, because that's how people discipline their kids. Piece of sugar cane, and man, listen, you better stop playing.
So when this happened, my sister, that they was older than me, mm-hmm. and they used to go out to dance, you know, and have fun. So they was happy, and some sent away, you know. I'm not saying that they was happy that they separate, but they was happy, you know, because now they can go out more, because my mother was more like, she was kind of, she don't say that much or nothing. Right. She was disciplined, but not like my father. My father was, you not go out this time, you gotta be here this time, you got, you know, like, my mother was like more like, so flexible. So, I don't know, I don't see that much, I only see that change, not the change of anything crazy, like, I don't know, like.
So let me ask you this. So do you think that with everything that was going on in your little mind at 11 years old, because usually 11 years old, what we thinking about playing with kids, we're thinking mm-hmm. about, you know, sitting and playing with toys, we watching cartoons. So with all that going on in your mind about the separation and how this whole household is about to change for you, for the worse, because now you're going from, you know, a two-parent household to a single-parent household. The line of communication and the doctrines that you were told, were you told in your household? Like, what goes on in here stayed on here?
Yeah.
Like, oh, so that you were...
The same thing that he said?
The number one rule in the Puerto Rican household.
You don't speak to social workers.
You don't speak to nobody. What happens house stays in this house.
That was how it was.
So do you think that locking all those emotions in and not being able to tap in to any of those emotions or identify with any of them, that they played a significant part in you smoking the marijuana?
So let me, because when I grew up, I was more with the elders. I used to hang out with the elders.
Okay.
Especially my brother-in-law, that he's one, you know, my best friend today. He was older than me, mm-hmm. so I used to hang out with my older brother. And my older brother and my brother-in-law. So another friend was older than me. So I don't find out hang out with on my age. I play sport with the same age, but I hang out with the elders. So that was kind of like for me to fit in more mm-hmm. than just not dealing with the situation. Because let me clarify something. When my parents went apart, yeah, I was baby. I was, I think, so 3 years old. I was not 11.
Okay, all right.
I was like 3 years old. So when I got to 11, I was already, you know, running, not the streets in a way, you know, bad, but like I say, I was hanging out.
You associated yourself with.
So I said, okay, so that's mm-hmm. what they do. Let me do that.
So smoke
weed, drink the vino el pavo, vino el canario, those things that I started
So you wouldn't say that it was peer pressure. You would just say that you found a group of individuals that was kind of going through some of the similar household issues that you were going through, and that was their way of suppressing what they were going through at the moment, and you just felt as though that was a gateway for you so you could be able to suppress yourself, your feelings as well.
That was more to fit in, like I say.
More, okay. More
that
to
was,
fit
like
in.
I say, in that moment, I don't know that I have a problem, to be honest. At 11 years old, I don't know, you know. Yeah, that affect me now. I can look back and be like, yeah, that was part of why I react or made this decision. But for me, there was more to fit in, to be around, you know, like to do what they doing, because so you gotta do that to be grown, to be grown, like to, you know, so to laugh, to do this, to. I said, I will do that.
So socially influenced, you would say. Socially influenced. So, okay, so now you're going into your teenage years. So tell us about that.
So, and everything took, now there, there was some behaviors on me that I can say that I can associate with what happened when my parents, you know, because then now I cannot stay with, you know, I cannot stay in the relationship. I was like kind of, I said, okay, my parents, they not together. So that means that I cannot be with a woman. In that moment, you know, I was young. So I was jumping around. I was abused, emotional abuse. No, I don't know if that makes sense, but not physically or not, you know, like, but more emotionally.
Emotional abuse is
it's worse
than physical, but it all equals the same. It's abuse, and a lot of the time what happens is that we come up and we pick up our parents' behaviors, don't even know it. We pick them up. You know, I can relate to him because I feel the same way. Like, there was a long time where I could not. And even to this day, spending so much time in prison, I don't mind being by myself at all. I'm always looking for something to leave. I used to tell people, right, I had a habit before. I used to buy clothes, socks, underwears, whatever, just wear them, take them off and throw them out. Never bother washing them. I did that for a long time after I came home. And I saw my therapist, and my therapist was like, why do you do that? I said, because I don't want to wash clothes. And that wasn't the reason. The reason was that's how I dealt with stuff in life. You know, wear it, once it's gone, bye, I'm out. Leave it where it's at, I'm out. I'm not carrying no dirty laundry with me. I'm not carrying that way. I'm not carrying people that I don't think are fit for my character and life. And that's, I picked that up from my mom, because when my mom was coming up, my mom had a boyfriend. She didn't want to deal with that joker. She gone. Bye. You got to go. Leave him where he's at. You know, so we pick up them behaviors, and we don't realize it when we children. He was 11. He didn't realize he was picking up them traits. But now we get older, and we start pimping. Like, wow, that's the same thing my mom did.
Yeah.
That's the same thing my mom did. Like, she ain't arguing with you or none of that. She just, bye.
Wow.
Which is worse than an argument.
Yeah.
Because at least with an argument, we could come to an understanding, like, all right, I got you. You got me. I got you. But when you just walk away, it's worse.
Yeah.
The mental abuse is worse than the physical and in some relationships.
That's why communication is really, really significant. Like, it's very vital in any type of relationship. I don't care if it's dealing with a child, dealing with a significant other, even building a relationship with yourself. Because I can relate to you as well, as you spoke about, like, certain doctrines. My mother, like I said, I shared this before, was emotionally unavailable. But now when I look back and I see all the struggles and, you know, hardships that she was facing at the time, she did the best that she could. And it took me a long time to get to where I'm at now. Like, now I consider myself a selfless person. I always think about other people, how they feel, you know, I'm very, very conscientious about what I say out of my mouth because I don't want to hurt someone. But yeah, Louis, this was so back to you.
That's good.
I mean, it's good because he's touching on that. He's touching on the same thing. What I'm interested to know about Louis is, like, you come to Philly, you're already rebellious. You 11, you doing it all, you out there. Bang. What was the moment that you said, damn, I'm out in the streets. I own these streets in Philly.
But let's go to the teenage years, because I feel like we're walking in that area where as though you feeling comfortable to go in from, because it takes you from one stage to the next, all right? So tell me about the teenage you. What was the teenage Soto like?
Well, let me say this. When I was a teenager, I was very... I grew up this ego and pride, and we all have it. But I'm talking about that took control of my teenager era, you know. And then I learned to bass. Me and my brother, younger brother, we went to, you know. So now, I always look bad to my parents. I don't know why. When it comes to a relationship, and I'm not saying relationship only with women. Any relationship, like you do, I always was looking for something wrong that you go do to me, and I caught you off. Mm-hmm. I was with a woman, and she started arguing or disagree with something with me, and I caught you off. I go to the next one because I always went bad to my parents. Yeah, so when I get to that teenager, you know, before I came to Philly, I always was fighting. I started do little hustling with my brother on the street, and I thought that I got something going on. You know, looking back, I said I ain't got nothing. But and I went through some challenge and troubles, you know, in my teenager, you know, and that moment also, my 33 years old only biological son, you know, happened when I was 18, go to 19 with my baby mother. But then she was 17.
So tell us a little bit more about when you say you're 18-year-old and you're 33-year-old. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So that I got into, that my baby ma.
You was in a relationship.
My baby ma was my girlfriend since we was like this.
Since you were younger.
Yeah. And me and my brother, we used to say, like, you know, he always say that his baby mother is now, that's going to be my queen. And I always say that my baby mother, she going to be my, you know, we always say that we was little. So we got into, you know, and she got pregnant, you know, and by then I was on high school. I had to quit school to work, because that's what we do in Puerto Rico. We ain't gonna be living under our parents, you know, and they, no, you gotta go to work. Mm-hmm. Back then, I didn't say no, so.
And now too, for the young boys out there, now too, you have to go to work, man. Y'all need to stop playing. If y'all want to do adult decisions and have babies, that should not fall on me, him, or her. You have to go to work.
Thank you for that, and I agree with that. So that's what we did, and I went to work anyway. So I got my first child, 1991. You know, so and same story repeat with my behavior. I don't stay with my baby mom. Because I did wrong to her. Mm-hmm. I cheat on her, you know. And I'm not here, you know. I already healed from that, yeah? In a way, you know. We already forgive ourselves, whatever, you know. We never went back together or nothing, but that's how it happened. So, and there, I never was focused to be the parent, to be the man, to provide, to, you know, to, I was not ready. So I thought that I was,
So you would say that you carried on that that generational dysfunction of being emotional unavailable for your, not only for the young lady that you thought that was going to be your wife or you addressed as your queen, but also for your child. So you felt like you was emotional unavailable for him. Tell me a little bit about that. What's your relationship with your son?
Now?
You like how?
Because then when I made that decision over there, she made the decision to come here to United States with my son.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about my son until I came here to Philly. So in the beginning, you know, he was a baby. So yeah, I was like happy or whatever. But at the same time, I don't know what is to be a father, to be, you know, a provider, to be, you know, like, I thought that I know. But when I made that decision, she came here. I stayed Puerto Rico by myself, you know, family, but I'm talking about in that relationship. So I don't know about my son until I came to Philly.
Okay.
So, and he was already 2 years going to 2 years when I came here. When I came here, he was going to 2 years. So she was already into another relationship or whatever, you know. So, and that's okay. But I got here and I got to see my son. And
you spent time with your son.
I started building a relationship with my son until I made another wrong decision. Now we over here. Where you want to start, you know, over here because I jumped to.
No, you're fine. So I know that you shared with me too. That you lost a child.
Yeah.
And I send my condolences to you for that.
Damn.
So, I mean, if you would like, could you share a little bit about that? Like, what was that? How was your relationship? How did it affect you? And how was you able to navigate through that?
So, 1995. I already before that happened, I already experienced some bad decision navigating the street.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I still was trying to work and do the right thing, yeah, but I still was deep in the diving, you know, I'm talking about hustling and everything. So I met this young lady and she was my sister, friends or whatever. So, and we get together. We started dating or whatever. Then she moved in with my sister, and that was like more even better.
That's more what convenient I thought. For
convenient.
You.
So we started going out, and then she got pregnant, you know, and
now she conceived your son.
Yeah. So and then what happened was that when that happened, I was leaning more to the hustling, to the street.
Mm-hmm.
I still was working on the landscaping, I remember, but I still was, the street was pulling me like more and more.
So you still like in an area where though emotionally you couldn't connect with nobody, like you couldn't connect with nobody, but you, it seems like what you're saying is I was a provider though.
Yeah.
Like I took care of things that needed to be taken care of. However, when it came to being on a personal level and being emotionally available for someone, I wasn't taught.
Yeah.
I wasn't taught that like those skills.
When she started requesting, like my be more present.
Right.
Not just for our son, but for her.
Mm-hmm.
I said nah, because now she started be like questioning me because I was going out with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And she also would say that my friends are womanized or whatever, you know.
Right.
And they was, but they my friend.
Would you say your friends were?
Womanized.
Because, I mean, you said earlier, listen, I hung around how I felt. I was attracted to unemotional, available people. I was attracted to the guys in my neighborhood where I lived that engaged in substance use. You know, you were saying that, like, mm-hmm. you became your environment and you geared more to your environment because not because you wanted to, But because that was a way for you to suppress certain things, like that was your avenue, that was your way out.
And that's true. So anyway, we got, you know, then that was all we argument, you know, and thank you, bro. You know, like I never wanna be in the commitment and mm-hmm. a relationship. And like I say, no, let me get, I want to, but because I was lean, the street was pulling me out, like, mm-hmm. I said, nah, hold on. I prefer this, that I'm free, I can do whatever, I can be with whoever, you know, I can coming in, coming out, in and out, like, and that's what I want.
So you built a relationship with the outside world?
Yeah, I did. So, and then that bring issues, argument, you know, so I said, okay, so, and then.
So then you have a son, y'all can see the son.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. my son was 5 months, few some days, I think so, 13, 14 days, something like that. And one day I came back from work. I'm not living on my own. But as we come by to my sister to see my son.
Mm-hmm. You would go by and visit him.
Yeah, so I don't know, Jacob's bar is right there on Lawrence and Cambria. My sister used to leave a few doors after Jacob's bar. And Jacob's bar, my sister used to be the best bartender back then.
Okay.
I'm talking about 1995. I came here to Philly in 1993. So I used to come from work Fridays, go in there in the bar. Mm-hmm. My sister go be there. I give a few Jack Daniel chat. I remember. Talk to my sister and say, yo.
Jack Daniel, people. Say no.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
I go, I say, Marta, that she's there, yeah, the baby there, yeah. So I go, I got key. But as we asked before I go in.
Okay.
So I went in, something I feel that was not right.
As you enter into the house,
yeah,
you feel right. Something comes that over you. Right. You got a feeling of, would you say, numbness?
Yeah.
Like,
and I call her name. No response. I went upstairs and I see the little bed. My son in there. I look in there in the room. She was laid down. TV on. Soap opera in Spanish or something.
Novelas.
Novelas. Thank you.
And I mean, hold on. We are bilingual here, so I don't want the Spanish audience, like, we do. Speak Spanish. Hablamos español. Real good too.
I was thinking like maybe he can do he's very fluent in both.
Yes.
Bilingual. So I was thinking like maybe you could share what you share in English and
yeah, because we got plenty of Latinos that listen to our show.
Yeah.
Ah, that's good. Yo no sabía eso. ¿Cómo están? Bendiciones. So anyway, so the thing is the. I found my son, 5 months, few days, dead. Not just dead, he was like dark coffee. Black, like purple, like, you know, he was, he was dead. And he got the biberon, the milk bottle, to the side with white stuff coming out of his mouth. So she started running downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even say nothing. I don't even know, you know, I thought that she was leaving. She running downstairs screaming that I go kill her. He go kill me. I said, I ain't say nothing to this woman. But at this day, she know already, wow, because that's what I want to do.
He was upset.
You know, so she ran out the door, went into the bar, hiding
What was the cause?
Nah, and that's where I get. So at this moment, street mentality. I got street mentality in that moment. She did that, I said, oh no, she got something to do with it. That was my first thought, because she just fly downstairs. She don't even check on the song, nothing like, you know, she just fly downstairs screaming. Say, what? So I believe because we got an argument days before, and she threw my face that was not my song. That was somebody else. Listen, that boy, no, because well, I did DNA and everything, because I know that was my son, but I just want to cheer her mouth up because I want to be there for my son. I was not there for my older son when he was a baby.
So you believe that this was a way for her to hurt you? Not hurt you by saying that with the, because women do that when we get upset, you know.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, guess what we'll do? Well, I'm going to say me, I'm going to speak for myself as an African-American woman. I know that if I'm in love with someone and I find myself getting connected to street guys, like, I just love, I don't know what it is. I'm just, maybe from my upbringing, from me being raised in a underserved community, whereas though, you know, it was like a popular thing. I was always entertained by what I saw on TV. I say this. At one of my other podcasts I had shared with the population or the people that I was speaking with, that I used to like Little Kim, like I idolized them. So I dressed like provocative, and you know, I saw Biggie, and I just wanted to be like, because it seemed like this was what it was like to be a woman. Like, because again, I was in a household where as though certain doctrines and certain ways of what I thought that a woman was entitled to being taught, I really wasn't getting that, because my mom was, she was in love with my stepfather. My stepfather was he was heavenly, he was a substance use disorder. I mean, a substance use user, you know, and he was heavenly into it, you know. And I think that she tried so hard to try to help him and get him into treatment. That was actually our first time. He got arrested so many times. That was our first time ever going and seeing what a prison was like. I mean, you got to go through so many processes and so many stages and barriers just to get back there. But yeah, and I think that, and my father, my real father, Adolphus, I remember him being there. But like you said, once that separation happened between my mom and my father, my mom started to have other relationships, which was totally different, and it impacted me as a child, because I still wanted daddy, but daddy had to go on with his life. Mom was going on with her life. But I felt that when mothers and fathers, they separate, they just look at their, how it's going to impact and affect them. They look at their, they look at the what's going on with them. I don't think that they really sit down and had that conversation about how is it going to affect the children. Now, I know that you can't stay in a relationship because of a child, because I hear that too. I hear a lot of married people say, like, I can't leave. You know, I'm only here because, you know, we got these two kids and we got to make sure these two kids be raised up in the household. But y'all are suffering. So we got to find ways to be able to have these comfortable conversations with our children and with the people that we love.
But the question was, why some of the women do that to hurt the male? I mean, what do they get from that other than...
Okay, so well, you got us that's lacking that father relationships, you know, abandonment. We feel that way. So when we get men, you know, especially the ones that, you know, we see the vulnerability in y'all. We see the vulnerability. We can, some women like myself can see that, you know, that you lack it in an area, you need attention, you need to be validated. You know, we know how much a child means to you. I'm pretty sure you share it with your child mom. You know, I didn't really get to spend time with my other son. So, you know, having that baby, even when it comes to having a baby, like we be so into locking y'all down and having y'all with us for so long, because we think like having a baby gonna change y'all, you know, and it really doesn't. We really need.
But then you have the baby and you put it out there. That's not your son. I mean, I heard that.
But
often.
That's not a hurt. That's not a hurt for him to give me more attention.
I know, but at the same time, it could create a situation for him, for the male, Because if you telling that to a traumatic person, a person that's been traumatized, a person that got daddy issues and mommy issues, because we do suffer from mommy issues too.
Yeah.
Man do suffer from that. You know, so now you telling me that's not your son. All I'm thinking is, my father left me, such and such left my mom. Now you telling me that's not my son. Oh, right. No. You triggering something that could cause somebody their life.
But plain and I'm simple. Pretty sure that she didn't know that. We don't know the magnitude
no,
of it.
No, I'm not saying she didn't. I'm just putting it out there to the people that's right. watching this, right? We have to be careful how we play these mind games. Earlier, he said that the mental abuse was worse than the physical.
Yeah.
When you do that to a male, a man, that is mental abuse. And then you wonder why that brother go into the next relationship with trust issues. Then you wonder why we don't want to stay. Then you wonder why I don't listen to Steve Harvey and take his advice. Then you wonder why all these stuff. I'm dead serious.
You're right.
There's trust issues because now I hook up with somebody else. I'm feeling that person. Oh, baby, I'm pregnant. Oh, is it mine?
All right.
Really? I mean, I think that's the most offensive thing you could ask a woman. Like, is it mine? If there's trust. Or is she think there's trust? But that don't come because I don't trust you. That come because I was in a relationship prior to you. Yeah. And I went on for 9 months and some more believing that that was my kid. And now you telling me that's not my son or daughter?
Well, this is so.
Get again, it together, sis.
It goes back to communication, you know, and I'm really big on communication now. Because before I was shut down, I would just be like, you know what? All right. And just walk away. I come from that era too, you know, like whereas though it's so easy for me, especially after the loss of my 7-year-old son. You know, I felt like my world had just hit rock bottom. I felt like everybody walked away. I felt like I could never love no other child. I could never love anybody. I just felt like love was just, it didn't exist no more for me, you know? But over a period of time, over a long period of time and hurt, and this is what the show is really, this podcast is really centered around. You know, it's not to re-traumatize anyone, as we share this a lot during the broadcast. It's the podcast is really just to get a person in an area that haven't lost a child or have lost a child for them to be able to go back, maybe get some professional help, maybe get a support system, someone they could talk to, so they can go back to where it began, so they could begin to start healing. Because whenever you experience any type of trauma, your mind is stopped at that level. You cannot grow past that level. You got to go back. That's why in therapy, they take you back to that stage of whatever trauma that you experienced so you could be able to address it. Why? Because we run from it. We find other ways to mask it. We find other ways to suppress it. And living in these vulnerable areas, places like what we see in Kensington and other areas in Philadelphia that is experiencing like high rates of trauma, we find that the community is desensitized. You know, when you go down to Kensington, you see the kids, they got book bags. They just walking around like it's normal. And that's what we do as children. Whatever the child has been, has witnessed in the household. So even with different relationship with men or physical abuse, if everything you do, you're so physical, even your body language, you know, on how you speak to a person or address something in the household, it affects that person and it can shut a person down. Like you said, you was in a relationship. The relationship wasn't a very healthy relationship, right? You said that you came into this relationship and you wanted to do something different from the previous relationship. But like I said in the last episode, we feed other areas with certain things that area doesn't even need. So what I say that to say, like, what my mom didn't give me, I gave to my other child. right? And it was a lot of things that I wanted materialized that I didn't have. So I gave it to my 7-year-old son, but I didn't give him that emotional piece. Like, I didn't, and I felt guilty about that for a number of years. Like, dang, like I was left when he was fatally taken away, I was left with the sneaks, I was left with the shirts, I was left with all the things that I bought him, but I didn't have a lot of memories. You know, I didn't have a lot of memories.
So when you say you didn't have a lot of memories, is that because you didn't invest in creating the memories or and like doing activities that you could remember? Because I come from a very dysfunctional background, but I could also say that there were times that I would never forget. Good times.
I had good and bad times, but I'm just saying where I come from. You know, I lived, like I said, I lived in a development, because I don't like to call them projects. I lived in a development where it had lack of resources. It was a lot of drug activity going on. It was gun violence going on. And in those type of environments, it's its own community. You know, it's like rivals that go on. Like, you can't just ride up in this area with your music blasting if you ain't cool with the other neighboring, surrounding neighbor developments around you. So it was a lot going on. So we became a family within itself. So within that family, if I saw Soto in the morning and we smoke, I'm like, come on, Soto, like, roll up. You know, we sit, we have a conversation, so on and so forth. And what we would do, what I would do is, as a mother, when my child would get up, because the kids, they up, and these type of developments, they up early in the morning, they out, they playing, you know, the parents up, they smoking, some of them still drinking from the night before. And what I would do is I would find something to distract him. You want a video game? You want to play with your bike? But I kept my attention on him, but I never really sat there with him, like how I do with my 7-year-old daughter and my 18-year-old son.
No, listen, I get it, because a lot of the times, that is what parents do. They shower us with material things.
It's distractions. Oh, they distract
distraction,
us
from, yeah. Whatever you want to call them, but they shower us with that because they focus on other things.
Yeah.
But it's happens, not intentional.
And no, it's not. But it happens a lot in our culture.
Yeah.
Like I got an aunt that worked like for 50 years before she passed. So my cousin was basically raised in my household.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he called my mom, and that was just his aunt. She raised him, take him to school, pick him up. By the time his mother came, he was already asleep, same thing over and over again. You know, that wasn't intentionally, but it happens.
Right.
He grew up in our households where we forgot that was my cousin. We was like, bro, we brothers.
Yeah.
We brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody thought my mom was his mom. But what I'm saying is this, that a lot of time we have to pinpoint the why. Nobody ever asks, does our parents know about therapy? Does our parents been through some trauma in their life? Because we see our mothers and fathers as the heroes, normal people, but we never go back into their background, what they've been through.
Listen,
I got it, but
we've been in the streets, so we do work, community work.
And I'm just saying that because he knows that in Puerto Rico,
uh-huh,
right, back in the 40s, when my mother was born in 1936. So we're talking about in that time, people was having children at 15, 16, 17, right? That sounds normal, but it's really not.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be traumatic to be in an island of Puerto Rico at the age of 16, 17, giving birth with everything that was going on at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Poverty, really no nothing to feed people with. It was hard. It was hard. The man just said, got 13 siblings. That's a family I don't want problems with.
Yeah.
Because you got to fight all 13 of them, right? I don't. But when you think about it, and he said he got two older sisters. So now you go back and you like, what was going on with their mother life, with their father? You know, why didn't the marriage work?
Well, first of all, you got to think about the fact that you had so many siblings. How could you be attentive to all those children, all right? Because sometimes I find myself, and I got two, and I don't know, my 7-year-old requires a lot of attention. My 18-year-old, because he walked through this life with me with the substance use, he saw a lot of the downfalls and the pits of homelessness that we experienced. He was able to, you know, experience all those traumatic times with me, which, and I felt, because that's what I was getting to with Soto, I'm so thankful that he found the outlet, because professional help is not for everybody, you know. You going to school and learning the way to treat or address trauma through through education or whatever's taught in the books, opposed to actually being on the streets. Like, we was on the streets. Like, we was homeless. Like, I know what it's like to be out there and trying to survive, you know, especially at, like, experiencing all these traumatic things that I had experienced. I'm talking about as a woman, you know, but it's always good because we always hear from the women. That's why I'm so thankful that we have men on here to share what it's like for a man. So I want to go back right fast, just briefly, to not so far into the argument or the conversation that she and her had about that night, but what was the cause of the loss of your son, and how was you after that emotionally?
Okay, so, and I just want to say, you know, to those they listen to us, you know, they, in the moment, I blame her just because how she went about the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And because my mentality, I only, you know, see that. Street mentality, I only see that she did something because what happened before.
Because of your street mentality, your street mindset.
And the argument that we had, she threw my face that is not my son. So I pulled that together and I said, She did this. So when they did the
autopsy,
yeah, and everything. So what happened? She got
suffocated
with the male, okay. With the, you know, and her explanation was that she put the baby with a bottle male and she went to the bed and she fell asleep. He was there for almost 5 hours.
Wow.
So. Now, today, I don't blame her. Mm-hmm. And today, you know, I can say, because I forget today, I'm 52 years old. Mm-hmm. So that was back in 1995. So today, and she know, because through her sister, I forgive her, you know, like years ago, you know, but I don't carry with that. But in that moment, that's what I thought. That's what I did want to do something to her in that moment. So she fly back to Puerto Rico. So from that moment on, my life was not the same. Now, like I say, I was already leaned to the street, but this right here led me to the habit, to the addiction.
In what way?
I started using
heroin.
Heroin.
Shooting.
Smoking. Smoking. Crack. You know, and did everything. You know, and I end up in and out from prison. Until I became homeless. You know, so I not blame her or nothing. I just say, and I don't blame myself because I already passed that through. You know, and I'm here today. I did. I still doing work on myself, but I did some work that got me where I'm at today.
Mm-hmm.
But that experience right there, to don't know how to deal with my emotion and my trauma and everything, to see my son there, it took me back out. The 11 years in upstate, you know, it was more like 4 years homeless, you know, and did everything that I did, you know, through all that time. until 2011 that I make a decision to do something different. So,
you were angry.
I was. I don't trust women. That took me to a dark place where I don't want to know nothing about a woman. I'm talking about relationship. When we talk, I say, listen, we gonna do this, and you on your way, and me on my way. Mm-hmm. That's how it works.
So what's different today?
Great question.
So, how long you been clean?
13 and a half.
That's a long time.
That's a long time.
13 and a half years.
But let me ask you this. Even though you clean, do you still find yourself thinking about them old patterns?
Yeah, I do. And I have to say that not too long ago, I went through a separation with my wife, you know, and I found myself, you know, not just thinking, reacting on sort of those parents, you know, or behavior. So, you know, but let me share this. What is different today? And a lot of stuff took place because when I started my journey of recovery, I found something more greater than just recovery. And that was my higher power, who I choose to call God.
Say it again.
Everything?
No. Who you found?
My higher power, who I choose to call God. Mm-hmm. That's what I found on my journey of recovery. It's still in recovery today, but I believe in God, that He made all this happening today. And that's the big difference, you know, that because it helped me, everything, the journey helped me to put all this trash or whatever, you know, inside of me, the old information, and receive new information, and still today doing it. There is not something that, you know, no, I still do some work today, because if not, you know, I can go back to that.
Work in progress. So, what do you do today? What do you do? What's your job?
So, I work for...
So...
Okay. So, today, I work for... You want to say something?
No.
So, I work for the City of Philadelphia today. And I am one of the assistant program manager with PAD, Police Assisted Diversion. That's my, you know.
Yo, let's get, yo, shout out to PAD. Do you know that was my first job after I came home?
Yeah.
At the 25th Police District for PAD.
Yeah, I think it's a good program that they
have. That's
what
I was one of the first persons they hired. I got the job through Prevention Point. At the 25th. Now, let that sit in. I come straight from jail. I'm in the police station. I still got an ankle monitor. I'm a case manager. I was a case manager. That's a good job. But the reason I say that is because I want people to understand, right? We could go through what we go in life, mm-hmm. right? That don't define who we are.
Right.
That's just... the trauma, that's just the mess that we invite into our life. But when you get to that point where you say, that's it, I'm done with everything. Mm-hmm. With everything. It don't mean we perfect human beings. It just means that we doing things different today. And he just laid that out. Like,
I got a question.
Yes, but let me finish.
Okay, go ahead.
I got to get back in mode, people, you know. and the reason I say that is because in the eyes of grieving mothers, a lot of people always ask, or been asking, that's just a woman's podcast. No, we have more male guests on the show than females, right? Because I want to make a point. Male do grief, and we grieve different.
Mm-hmm.
We do it different. You know, we get emotionally first, then we get boxed into our own little world, yeah. And that's when the problems come. That's when we turn to substance, alcohol, and everything else. Yeah. Trust issues and everything else.
That's...
And even after you are able to pull up from that darkness, you're still going to have some work to do.
Mm-hmm.
Still going to have work to do. It don't mean that you perfect. It just means that, you know what? I live with the fear that this might re-happen again. Mm-hmm. I do that myself. He knows. I came home after 31 years. A year later, my ex-wife locked me up. A year to the day I was home.
Wow.
Locked me up on a false accusation. It took 90 days to find out that she was lying. You know, so I live with that fear in a relationship where as soon as I see something getting out of pocket that cannot be talked to, mm-hmm. I see, I don't even say I see you later. Where you going to work? I'm not coming back. Mm-hmm. I got my own place. Yeah. No matter what relationship I get into, I keep my own place. Mm-hmm. Just in case that person decide, like, I'm done with you, get out.
Was that one of the reasons why you live on these dock, like the way that you live today? It's because people told you that before?
Oh yeah, I live my life on time. Mm-hmm. Always. You know why? Because if somebody said at 8:45 he was here, okay. I could always prove I'm serious. And I'm gonna tell you, right?
Yeah.
Shout out to Pab, right? Because it was because of them I could prove that I wasn't there when she said I was there. My ex-wife said I was in Delaware, Thanksgiving's Day. Thanksgiving Day that year, I was down 8th in Somerset, mm-hmm. giving out food with the 25th Police District in the train station. They had the pictures, the videos, and everything.
Wow.
And they came to the parole hearing and said, here you go. It couldn't be him. So I developed this thing with time where wherever I go, I want to make sure I document that.
Yeah.
So you would never say he was here.
Yeah.
We never say that,
mm-hmm.
you know. And goes back to what he said. You know, it's a work in progress. Maybe one day I get rid of time, but I'm on time all the time.
Yes, you are.
Even when I get home, right? I record myself. I got a bunch of recording equipment in my house. And there's people say that's weird. It ain't weird. You know why? Because it could come in handy one day.
Mm-hmm.
Come in handy. So I get it when he say like. It's a work in progress, man. Like, people, listen. He's one of us, man. This ain't no random person been through the trenches from Puerto Rico all the way to Philadelphia to now being what, a manager? Assistant manager.
Assistant.
For Pab. Listen, can't get no more real than that. And guess what? I seen his progress.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I seen his progress from the inside, from out here. Yeah. And I don't say this often. I do not say this often. But I say it all the time. And he know it because we speak off the air.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of this brother. You know why? Because he motivated me when I came home to do the type of work that I'm doing.
Wow.
Yeah, him and my brother, shout out Ramon Cruz.
Ramon Cruz.
Oh, yeah, Ramon.
You know,
Cruz.
Shout out to them,
shout
bro.
Shout out to Ramon, man.
You know, when my situation happened, Ramon Cruz was the first one that reached out.
Yeah.
It couldn't be him. I was there with him.
Yeah.
You know, so what I'm saying, people, is like, no matter what we go through in life, if we really want to make that transformation, we can. This is living proof right here.
Yeah.
Glory to God.
Get it, T.
Glory to God. I'm like you. I'm just taking it all in. I'm humble. I'm so thankful that, and you're a very humble person too, Louis. Like, you're always willing to, like, you know, like, be there for somebody else. Always showing your selfless acts. And you're not just a person that talk. Like, your action shows for it. I remember when I was advocating for my son for the school district, and he was like, we had already been down here because we were supposed to speak. We had a presentation down at CCP. And I thought that at the end, I'm like, I know he was already down here. They probably gonna go home. And him and my supervisor was like, no, like, we're going down there to support you. You know, so the relationships that we built, and, you know, like, I'm a person that follows a 12-step way of life, you know, so I could be able to get better. So I follow a 12-step program, rather. Because if not, I will revert back to my old patterns, because that's something I'm familiar with. It's so easy for me to say, you did something to me, boom, I'm cutting you out. You know, and I have 10 years clean, but it's the ongoing.
I hope she don't cut me out when I tell her she got to be on time.
Oh, my God. No, you know what? But you know what? One thing about me, and through this program, I learned to be honest with not you, but with myself. Right. So I will tell a person, I got time management issues. Like, I'm trying to get better with it. And it's like, no matter how much I try to hurry up and pack up and get ready, I will still, Lewis even said it. He said, listen, not 9:03. Not 9:04. 9 o'clock, T. So, no, but listen, so what I wanted to say to Lewis is if you could say to someone that's out here that's watching this podcast this morning from the Latino population, or just in general, you know, what would you say to the families that still teaching these doctrines that they teach their children in their household about what goes on in my house stays on in my house? When a child is physically disciplined, you tell that child, man up, be a man. Because what they're doing is they're having them lock in some feelings and emotions that they can't even identify with. And it shelters them. And what it does is it manifests itself and it grows and develops into a physical anger, whereas though we got the children today that go out and just pick up guns now because I can't tell you hurt me. I don't know how. It's not that I can't. They don't know how to convey that without feeling like, oh look, you made amends with Suave, man. You a punk. Get off the block. Well, no, I'm not. I'm trying to build a communication here. I'm trying to be able to, you know what I'm saying? I'm trying to be able to communicate so that we could alleviate some of the beef and trauma that's going on in the community. So how would you, again, what would you say to those families that still teaching these same doctrines that was taught in your household, using physical abuse instead of sitting a child down and communicating with them? What would you say to them families? And I want you to say this in
Spanish and
in English. Spanish and English, and in English, yeah.
Bueno. Lo voy a decir primero en español. I go say it bilingual. So, and that's, when I heard that, you know, that you was asking to, you know, to share, that's not an easy easy to say or es algo fácil para to advise. Let me say that. Now, me coming from a family member, I'm coming from, you know, like my family, yeah? So I don't want to focus, I want to use my experience navigating my family member, my sibling, my, you know, like my nieces, my, you know. So it's many ways to romper esa cultura, because that's kind of like a culture, like a cultura, you know, like we grow up some kind of way. Puerto Ricans, we grow up this way. We're not telling nobody our problem, you know. You're not going nowhere, you know, to therapy or whatever, telling people, you know, you don't cry. People still telling our kids those kind of stuff that I hear when I was a child. Now, I'm not here to tell the parents, you know, like how to raise their child, neither.
We're giving suggestions.
Suggestions, mm-hmm. You know. So what I'm saying is, you consider yourself a resource. When I say resource, I'm talking about that you know where are the information. You know how to share that information with your child, that's okay. And I go say that because I got a sister that she don't let my little nephew go out nowhere to the street. They go from school to the house and they play games or whatever. But if you check their grade, they got a good grade. Mm-hmm. They good kids. And I say they not perfect, but they not. I'm talking about 15, 16, 17, and they good kids. Mm-hmm. So it's always a way to balance. Okay. If you go do something like that, it's not just to put the kids inside in the room all day long playing games and they don't even want to take a shower because I see that. So, but what I'm going to say is to allow allow the kids to be kids, you know, the children to be kids, yeah, but also in the meantime, you know, you always take a moment to share with them, to talk to them, to have those conversations with them, like a one-on-one, or even as a group. Mm-hmm. Let's do a support group and a family. I started that with my little nephews and nieces one day, you know, but then they got all boring, you know, about the conversation that we was having, so I stopped it. But I think so that's a good idea. So I think so that we as a parent, we have to be more open and allow the child to open up with us, to share how they feel and ask the question that they want to ask today. And we have to also to use the resources and services that are available for them, you know, today. Not try just to raise the kids how you think that it should be raised. And I'm not saying that that's wrong, but also it's a lot of trauma, a lot of, you know, what's going on with the child today for whatever they see or whatever they experience, even in the house or outside. And I think so that they need to get some professional help. If you think that they need it, they should go out and get those help. So I don't like to share, you know, because I don't want to, you know, nobody to take, you know, like we telling people, you know, like what to do with their child, you know, but I think so they have to do, they have to get more help and resource, you know, in some ways. And it's a lot of them right now today.
I mean, in closing, I want to be a little more direct. With parents in my neighborhood, Philadelphia, know what your child is getting into at all times. Check their bedrooms. Look under their pillows. Go in the closet. Go in the drawers. Go on their Facebook. Go on their Instagram. Follow them. Because in today's culture, it's young children's out there buck wilding. Mm-hmm. And then we wonder, what happened to my child? Well, guess what, mothers and fathers? Your child is on Facebook, flashing guns, stacks of dollars, and everything else. And then we want to complain. Then we want to scream and holler, my child was a good child. In your eyes, in my mother's eyes, I was a good child. And I wish that my mother would have known what I was into, because maybe I would have been saved from 31 years of incarceration. I tell you, people, prison saved my life.
Mine too.
Because if I wasn't in prison, I would have been dead in 1986. That's how I was. So that's why you need to be involved in your children's life. It's not just about I got them the latest Jordans, I got them the latest gear. It's about knowing what's in your house. That's how we really needs to get involved in 2024. Uh-huh.
Let me say this too, Suave. So incarceration, I agree with you, saved my life as well. But it wasn't just about the incarceration, because you could take a person and institutionalize that person. But if that person is not getting any type of mental or any type of therapy, that person will come back out. All you're doing is locking that person down into that same mindset. You know, that same, the same behaviors that they had prior to them same, I'm trying to think of the word, them same destructive behavior. You can't just take a wild dog and just put them, and I'm not referring to people as dogs, I'm just using this as like hypothetically just speaking. You can't take a wild animal and put it into an environment and then think that because it's in that environment, it's going to change. No, it may, because it's not being out into the population, it may be settled for a while, But you go in there with that wild animal. You go in there with that tiger if you want to. A tiger gonna act like you, just like it was when on the streets. So it has to be some resources put in place too. And shout out to the criminal justice system, because now that they have programs like the PAD programs, now they're intervening. They got a lot of initiatives out there. You got coffee with a cop. The police department, I know it's a lot of relationships that we see that was on the news with cops that was doing unrightful and unlawful things. However, you can't put that on all the police officers. They are out there and they're trying to find ways to engage with the community again and rebuild them relationships. So we have to be open-minded, start coming out, going out to the community meetings. When officers or the police districts is having any type of community events, you know, just don't go out there just to let the kids just go and play because of the moon blasts or the activities. No, go out there, have the conversation with the captain, have a conversation with the community leader that's over that department and the police department. Find out how can we get involved, because that's what it's about. We got to be led by example. And that's why our children is engaging in all this type of criminal activities, because they are influencers. They're influencers are what? On social media. They listen to them. They play this crazy music in their ear. You know, even with the language on how they address women, it's who they're being influenced by. So I just wanted to just share that.
And when you do call the police and ask for help, make sure you ask for Louis Soto, the PAD program. I'm going to tell you why. The PAD program has some magnificent resources available.
Tell us about the PAD program.
They have it.
What do they have?
They have resources. I mean, briefly, because we pass our time, people.
Okay, all right.
But I'm just saying, if you see him out there, that's a resource. He's just not a person that's always wearing that Philly. Well, I don't like Philly teams, but I like the P, because my man represent Puerto Rico to the T all the time. But seriously, people, in closing, we just want to say thank you.
Thank you so much
for being here. Thank you for the work that you do in the community.
Thank you for
your thank you for your journey, because it's because of people like you that we could probably save a couple of people out there.
Yeah. So before we go, if you had anything positive that you could say or anything to an individual that's watching this podcast right here or listening, what would you say to that person if they're in a time of despair, if they're in a time where they're locked into one of the stages of grief and they can't accept something or they're in anger? What would you say to them to encourage them, to let them know to hold on and be hopeful?
I want to say this. I want to say be yourself, yeah? But to be yourself, you have to find out who you are first. Be yourself, because I hear sometimes that people say, be yourself, yeah. But sometimes I don't want to be my own self. Because especially years ago, because I don't know who I was. So if you don't know who you are, find out who you are first. I don't know. He does go through some acceptance or believing or God or you know. But you gotta find out who you are, because like that, then you can work. You know, with everything that is going on before, you know, like inside you and then around you. But if you don't know who you are, you know, like that's what we go be. A challenge or not a challenge, it's going to be always hard, hard to deal with stuff outside.
You spiritually did, but physically.
Yeah,
did.
So that's my, you know, don't give up, keep fighting, but you have to know who you are and what you're carrying inside in you.
Do you say it in Spanish?
So, tienes que buscar, rapidito, tienes que buscar quién tú eres. Si tú no sabes quién tú eres, búscate tú mismo. Ya sea a través de Dios, de la religión, de deporte, lo que sea, pero búscate quién tú eres, confía en ti, no te quites de lo que tú hagas, sigue peleando, pero busca quién tú eres dentro de ti, porque así vas a saber cómo lidiar con las cosas internas y las externas.
And if you heard it here first,
good grief,
then you know it's officials in the eyes of grieving mothers.
Good grief.